Angelo Cervi, Fred Film Radio. We are in Berlin at the Berlin Film Festival, here with Pablo Larraín, director of El Club. What brought you to this story?
Yeah, it's, you know, and it's very hard to answer. Because it's like, when you fell in love with that woman, it's like, it's very hard. I think we were talking about this. I'm sorry if I repeat something, but it's, you know, I cannot change the answer if it's the same question, you know. But I was raised Catholic, went to Catholic schools, and I met priests that were very, you know, nice, honorable people. And I also met priests that are today in jail. Priests that were like teaching me in school are today in jail or with issues with the justice. And I also met priests that are gone, you know, they're lost, that I don't know where they are. So it's like, where are they? Like, what does the church do with them? There had to be something, you know. And then we started looking around, we did some research, we spoke with the former priest, and then we realized that there's like a whole system around. What the church does is they hold these houses all over the world. Like in Germany, there are many of them, where they would send priests for many reasons, not only for the obvious one or the first one that you could think about. Because that's part of the problem. Like, I think the church issues is over-sexualized, you know, and that's all we're talking about when it's not really what's going on here. It's way more than that. There's people that's lost of faith, people that it's just somebody fell in love with a woman, or somebody realized that she's homosexual but never actually done anything or abused to anyone, whatever. And a lot of mental illness too. It's very interesting. So what happens is like in a small, don't think about the biggest cases or the bishops or the, you know, the headlines. Think about like a small parish in anywhere, like in a town with 5,000 people where there's like a little church and there's a priest that lives and works there. So that guy, then all of a sudden happens something to him, and before that gets worse or it becomes a scandal, he would be grabbed and sent into these houses forever. So like that's what's also very amazing, because if this happens to you when you're 42, then you can spend like 50 years living in a house like this. So it's very unique, and it has to do with two things, I would say. First one, with the logic that the church does not believe in the civil justice. They believe that they will only be judged in the eyes of God. So they're saying to us that in a way that they are the different. And then it's also the logic of impunity, you know. And so I thought about putting all these elements together. And then we spoke with people that was abused, not only by priests, by other people. And then some of them really, it was amazing. Some of them were people that would tell you how they were abused for many, many years in a way that they was not like a problem, you know, it was not like without pain, like in the movie. And he would be very graphic. And he could just tell you exactly how he was, you know, abused with very graphic details many, many times. He could just go on and on and on and on and keep talking about. And that is interesting and super, super violent. And we want to use it. I don't know, so it's a long answer. Try to explain.
How did you choose the house and the village where you shot the film?
Oh, you know, it's very simple. I have a house like 3 miles away from that place. So I go there to buy bread, and I just think it's amazing, the town. I always look at it because it's like an old town that is only really open for like 1 or 2 months in summer. So it's shut down during the year, and all the houses has this, you see, this like this, they have this, the windows are blocked. So and it's like a ghost town. And I've been going there for 15 years. So I always go there to buy things. My house is not exactly there, but it's like the town where you can buy stuff. And you go there, and I always thought that it could be a good place. And then I thought about this, and I went there, and I see this yellow house, and we were just calling and trying to find out who is the owner. Can we rent it? Yes, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, but it's very simple. It's just because it's near my house.
no symbolism involved.
No, there's no... No, and I think it works, you know, because it's the house... It could be in any other town, but it's just not you know, like Santiago in a main city. It's a place that it has to be a place where nobody would be looking for them, you know.
But did you manage to talk with any of those priests during your preparation?
Yeah.
And how did they react to your questions? I mean, how did
we spoke with two former priests, guys that were priests, and they became. They became I don't know. They quit the church. Yeah. One of them because he fell in love with a woman, and the other one because he had political problems inside the church. None of them were involved in this, but they knew, of course, how what I'm trying to tell you about. So we got some information.
The nun seems to be the keeper of the house. She pretends not to know, but she does. Could it be that she embodies the church itself?
I never thought about it. It's very possible. It's interesting. Yeah. I never thought about it. What happens is that, what we try to do, and I think it's really funny, sorry, but is that like she's there, and you think she's like kind of controlling the house, and he's in charge of the house, and so he has the rules, and he. But at some point you realize that she's also being sent there because she cannot be out, you know. So she's as dangerous as the priests are, you know. So
but she's really, even more dangerous than
that. Right, so she's not really taking care of anyone. It's like she's like everybody's taking care of everybody. And at some point she's the one that brings the danger. Because what happens here is that I think the church has become a corporation where the main fear is not hell, as it's been forever. The main fear now is the media, the press. That's the key. So that's what she does. That's the threat. If you do anything to us, I'm going to call it TV. When the movie gets there, don't spoil it, please don't put this, but just the truth. So when you get there, it's just, that's the panic, you know? That's what the church is really fearing, and she has conscious of that, you know? She knows that, so she's very dangerous. And it's, it has this very cynic behavior. It's like, yeah, like, she's like constantly smiling and whatever, and everything is underneath. And we shot other things that they're not on the movie, that were too abstract. It's just to give you an idea. Of course, this is silly to talk about scenes that are not in the movie, but where like we were like shooting the things in the house at night, where people will be kind of be moving from one room to another, and never really graphic, never really seeing anything. It's just shadows, bodies moving, like weird noises, and it was like too much. So it's like, yeah, it was like, it was, let's say that it happens and we don't know, or if it happens, it's just we could be more elegant. So it was like a little bit silly. And
you talk to priests. They left the church. How come there are not many of them who leave when they are sent there?
Because they did something. So the key is fear. If they go out, in the movie the guy says, this movie doesn't have keys. This house has no keys and no doors. Because if you see, there were no doors inside. Nobody could have in this house. No privacy. But the main door is open to you. So everybody can leave. This is not like, that's what is weird, you know? It's like, like an open jail. So you can just go on Google, and it's called Los Siervos de Peráclito, the Peracle Servants, which was an organization created by the Vatican in 1954, dedicated exactly to this. Exactly to this. Started for 5 houses, and then he ended up over 50 houses all over. And that worry is spread. Why it was founded in the 52, and not before, because in 52 the media got very bigger and important, so it was a real threat. So they had to put these people away. And it started, and it's very crazy and interesting at the same time what happens with this organization, because they tried to, they were just like, how do we deal with this priest, like the people that have schizophrenia or are homosexuals, because you know they think it's an illness, so they wanted to cure an homosexual, which is fantastic. It's just, you know, like it's fucking crazy, you know. And it's so they were discussing what kind of treatment they would give them, if it would be throughout pills or medication, or only throughout a spiritual process. So that was the kind of the conflict, and then it just opened and worked. So it was an organization, and then it just spread. What happens is that, you know, the church itself as an organization has a specific structure, and then there are congregations, right? You know, congregations. So it's like the Jesuits and whatever. There are many. So if a priest gets in trouble, and that priest is coming from a specific congregation, the congregation will take care of it. Okay, so Schoenstatt, for example, which is a very important organization, a congregation that is in Latin America, has a house in Switzerland. So all the guys that are in trouble now, even including 2 Chilean priests, are now in Switzerland in that house. That was the first time I ever heard about this. And then if the priest was not in a congregation, so he went to a seminar in the church structure, then the church will take care of him, which is the case of the movie that you saw. It's not from a congregation. Because if it would be come from a congregation, it would have different rules and systems, and it would be probably international, with people from different countries, which is also a very interesting idea. But we decided to do it, I'm telling you, because we just thought it was proper, and I don't know, in a way, better.
How did you choose the visual style of the movie?
Never shot in digital before, so in HD. I did no video, but it was with very old vintage video. So and I bought many years ago a set of lenses that are very old Russian lenses. And it's anamorphic Lomo lenses, which is the brand that Tarkovsky, people like that generation use. So we put them in the camera, we sort of adapt them. And then we use filters and many other things. I think what happens is that HD has created that now movies looks pretty much the same. When we were making movies in film, like, you know, you have to, the film, the process, it's something of it's a combination of chemical stuff that has to be in specific temperature. So it's never very accurate, even if you control it very well, every lab will be different, and then you have to wash it. So you will wash it with the water that it becomes of each country. That create identity. So do you remember that I remember, like in the 80s, you would look at a movie and you say, ah, that's an American movie. And when you look at it and it was, that looks like an Italian movie in France. Don't you think so? That it was like a search of aesthetic. I remember all the like the Eastern Europe movies. Like, so we had something. Now it's the same kind of CCD or chip. So everybody has the same. That's why we're trying to not to be so homogenic, you know. And that's why we were just looking very hard to have a look. And then I also never used a Steadicam before, which was what we did, and we try to have kind of a soft tone. And we work in extreme hours on the days in the exteriors. I believe movies are made out more out of more than the tone is almost more important than the story itself, and we work very hard on that. I think it's the aesthetic aspects are very, very important.
Are you a religious person?
No, I was raised Catholic, but I became a filmmaker. So the danger is that this movie is made by people that was raised and educated by Catholic schools. So it's like somebody that used to be in one army, then it's like attacking, you know, it's in another army, you know, in the other team. So it's like that hurts probably for them. But I don't know. I think what happens is that since the church has been trying, and they actually have, in a way, have been doing it for so many years to be the moral standard, you know, to tell us all what to do and how things are and what's a sin, what is not. And then they became the worst ones, you know, and they cannot say, I'm sorry, you know, they don't believe in forgiveness or any of that things. It's just so disappointing and so sad that they, you know, so it's just I think this movie, the way it is, it could only be made by the people that did it, and that's why it's cinema, you know. Nobody would ever do it because that never happens, you know.
I want to ask you one thing. This place where those priests are sent is like a purgatory, basically. And but is there preview the kind of redemption for those characters, or are they just sent there to rot and die and without any kind of redeem themselves?
It's hard to say that because I think in every case is different. You know, I don't think everyone has the same kind of destiny and relationship with what they did or not. I have no idea. What I do know is that from all the research I did, from all what I've been investigating for a while, I never seen a priest saying, yes, I did that. They're always innocent. Have you ever heard a priest saying, yes, I did it, admitting it? They never did it. They never, but no one, man, just not seen one single priest anywhere in the world has admitted anything, never. Even people that have been jailed forever, that has been sent to jail for like perpetual. So it's like, I don't know, redemption is a kind of a weird word when you think about those guys, I think, if they never say that, you know, it's like, so I don't know. None of them admit anything. Only Alfredo, his character, said at point, I might say, that I slept with a boy, that I breathed his breath, that I looked at him, that he wore my cassock, and I painted his lips red. The other one says, when the guy is yelling outside, I don't know him, I've never seen him. The other one, we don't know why is he there. The nun is accused that she was hitting an adopted girl, and he said there's a lie, that his mother created that lie because she didn't her to have a black daughter. And then the guy that stole the kids, the children's, says that it was in order to save their life because they wanted to have an abortion.
I was curious about the role of the greyhounds and the gambling.
You want me to tell you something smart and a good lie or the truth? We were going to see the place with my team, and then we see that there were these people, they were like, we see all these stray dogs. And then we saw they were greyhounds. It's like, why? It's weird. Like, why is it so sophisticated, like stray dogs, you know? And then we realized there was a race. And then we said, what is the priest have a dog. And then I got into the Bible and I realized that it's the only dog that's mentioned in the Bible. It's like a huge coincidence. And then I went to see how they trained, and then they had this stick. And I'm like, whoa, it's a circle. And then it just made so much sense, because you remember the quote that is at the beginning of the movie, that it says, and God saw that the light was good, and then he separated the light from the darkness. And then the movie starts with this circle that Alfredo is doing with the dog. I think that's what the movie is for me, that it's not possible to separate the light and darkness, it's just a circle of both together, to keep moving around on that idea. It's not that it's here or there. That's the problem for the church. They think this light and dark, and there, of course, in the light. Thank you, guys.
It is Pablo Larraín, director of El Club for Fred Film Radio from the Berlinale 2015.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.